IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. Certainly over the last week and possibly over the last few months, the world has been watching with great interest the way things are unfolding with respect to the elections in the United States of America. It would be fair to say that it's been a very tumultuous ride for those of us following it closely. And for all of us sitting in India, it also represents an opportunity to understand how different parts of the information ecosystem have played off each other, how the mass media, social media platforms, and even the WhatsApp uncles have dealt with various strands of disinformation out there. Right? And to do that, on today's episode, we have two guests with us who spend most of their time very much in the thick of things when it comes to information disorder. We have Devika Khandelwal. Devika is a senior fact checker with Logically, and she had the most unenviable job of trying to fact check some of the presidential debates. And I also have Himanshi Dahiya. Himanshi is a fact checker with Webpoof for The Quint. And she focuses on disinformation and hate, two topics, as most of our listeners know, something that I spend a lot of time on. And as of today, we're recording this, Himanshi also has a very interesting thread compiling some of the disinformation we've seen with regard to the Bihar elections. I can only hope it doesn't grow too much between now and whenever this episode actually goes up. So, Devika, Himanshi, welcome and thank you for joining me on All Things Policy.
Thank you. Thank you, Prateek. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. And so, you know, let's get right into trying to understand what India can learn, or the information ecosystem in India can learn from the way things have played out in the US, right? And let's maybe focus on the social media platforms and then the mass media outlets. So, Devika, you had, like I said, the unenviable job of fact-checking some of the presidential debates, right? So, you know, talk us through what that was like, what sort of different narratives and disinformation attempts you saw, how you dealt with both the candidates, right? Because in terms of how they approach their public communication, there's a great contrast between both of them. And, you know, do you think that there are parallels or similarities that, you know, we could take away in India and for the ecosystem here?
Right. So obviously fact-checking the presidential debate was quite hard. It required a lot of work, a lot of research and prep went into it. At Logically, we're basically a tech company, and we built a capability that didn't exist, I think, until about 3 months ago, where we combined AI with human moderation so we could live fact check the presidential debate. And it was an unprecedented task that we took on. But there was a couple of things that we noticed in terms of the narratives and the misinformation trends that came out of it was that both the candidates have an extremely different, have a very different view and a different way of reaching out to the audience and of also reciting their side of stories and sort of build their narratives. So we all know that Trump is extremely outspoken. He isn't afraid, I guess, of making statements, making assertions. Fact-checking Trump is obviously really hard because a lot of things that were said during the debates couldn't be substantiated from our end. We couldn't find any source. We couldn't find a lot of proof or evidence behind what was being said. There was a bit of a challenge in terms of checking things that were said by him. At the same time, checking Joe Biden is equally hard because he's been in politics for about 47 years now, and he has a really long career. So, and checking things, making that assertions that he made from about 1980s and 1990s were hard because we had to look at his entire historical record to give judgments that we thought fit well in the context of things. One of the biggest things that we saw in the run-up of the elections is a lot of disinformation that came out from the said laptop, which allegedly belonged to his son. There was a lot of disinformation coming in from that was related to Ukraine. There were also a lot of flags around Russian disinformation that we noticed. So we also, as a company, have to monitor different social media websites, closed groups, open sources, and it is important for us to flag dangerous information. We also do deep dive investigations that helps us sort of locate where misinformation and disinformation is coming from. In terms of drawing parallel to India, I think there are certain lessons that we can pick up from the US elections. Is I think there is definitely a need to, if not live fact check, then at least fact check a lot of speeches, a lot of assertions, and a lot of rhetoric that are made by different politicians going up to the election. I think there's a need to hold them accountable for things that they're saying, which I think a lot of organizations are doing in India at the moment, but we definitely need to scale them at this point.
All right, great. And Imachi, I want to come to you now. So you've written about some of the efforts that platforms took, right, in the run-up to the elections. So how effective do you think those, and at this point, you know, we don't have a lot of information, so I'll say, how effective did they appear to be, in your view? And again, similar question to Devika, from an Indian perspective, you know, what do you think we can take from there?
Yes, so I think, like you said, you know, at this point, it's very difficult to predict how effective the measures which the platforms took were, because it was already predicted that a lot of misinformation will be coming in days following the results, right? So we don't really know how effective have they been. But for now, what I know is, and what we can very clearly understand, is that 2020 wasn't really 2016. The platforms, they did, on the face of it, they did take a lot of precautions. They were under immense pressure to, you know, limit the impact of disinformation. I can just list a few measures which they took. For example, they placed labels on misleading tweets by politicians, be it we saw a lot of tweets by Donald Trump which were labeled. Then we saw Twitter limiting its trending section. We also saw Facebook acting against the QAnon group. And we also saw Twitter restricting retweets, the options to retweets. So all these measures, I think they eventually were aimed at creating some sort of friction and limiting the spread of disinformation. So most of the measures, they were not really aimed at countering disinformation in the bud, but definitely they did limit the spread of disinformation during the entire campaign. So, for example, even with the Hunter Biden story, which Devika interestingly referred to here, even in that case, what the platforms did to tackle the New York Post story was something which was unprecedented, something which we hadn't seen before. Twitter took down the story, and Facebook limited its reach until it was fact-checked. So on the face of it, they did take a lot of steps, a lot of measures, but how effective they've been is really difficult to predict as of now. Coming to Indian context, coming to, you know, the lessons which India can pick from there is, for one, we need to hold the tech companies accountable. There has to be greater accountability. Because if you even compare the measures which they took right now, which the tech companies took during US elections, and if we compare them with what happened during the 2019 Lok Sabha elections in India, or in fact, Bihar elections are just on, right? And I don't see so many of those measures being implemented here. So we need to build certain pressure on them, and we need to hold them accountable so that they do start implementing certain measures in India as well. I think that's something we should be doing for now.
Yeah, that's interesting to bring that up, because, you know, a couple of examples just from the last few days that kind of strike my mind, right, was one was this post about a rally that was supposedly happening in Calcutta. But it's it, you know, it's a 3-year-old video from Bangladesh. I think a lot of people flagged that to Twitter, right? As soon as it went online, I think that post stayed online until the Kolkata police threatened to take some sort of action, right? And there was another case with a politician where Facebook initially flagged it as misinformation and then went back saying that political speech is exempt from independent fact checks, right? Which is quite interesting and quite a contrast, right, to how they've been handling things in the US elections versus you're seeing that happening in India as well, right? And I wonder how much of that is down to priorities, down to capability, right? It's a mix of that. From what you guys have seen, where do you think it lands?
I think it's really interesting that you brought up the two examples because the Kolkata rally, the tweet which was supposedly, you know, which showed a rally from Bangladesh and Madhu Kishwar, I'd like to name her here, who shared it in context of Kolkata. She's a repeat offender. I mean, this is not the first time that she's actually shared disinformation on Twitter. And despite that, Twitter fails to take any action. Similarly, you know, in case of politicians like Himanta Biswa Sarma's tweet, which was first labeled and then Facebook removed the label saying that it goes against your policy. It is a huge contrast because if you look at the United States, you're actually labeling tweets by Donald Trump, you know, who was the president. And here you can't even label tweets by, let's say, seemingly little, people at a little, lower position comparatively.
Yeah.
So that is a huge contrast, and I think it is a mixture of both, where they need to have that kind of resources, because a lot of misinformation or disinformation which politicians share in India is not actually factual. A lot of it is rhetoric. A lot of it is said in a way where fact checking it becomes very, very difficult. So it is a combine of resources and priorities, of course, because most policies which Facebook or Twitter implement, they first, you know, they roll it out in the United States or in all the countries in the United Nations Security Council, for that matter. So after that, they come to countries, they'll come to India. So priorities and resources both play a very crucial role here, where I think it has to be a mixture of both.
So I completely agree with you. And I think, like you said, priority and resources are really important. I think in terms of resources, it's extremely important that a lot of tech companies or even media companies need to develop their linguistic capabilities. They should be able to sort of monitor misinformation, disinformation that's coming from vernacular languages. And I think from stuff that I've noticed and a lot of trends that I've seen, a lot of misinformation actually originates in the vernacular languages. They don't come from Hindi or English. So, you know, with the West Bengal elections coming up, there has to be some kind of, multilingual capabilities that needs to be developed, where we can try and track stuff that's coming out in Bengali, where social media platforms have that capability inbuilt, where they can flag posts as misleading. And I think another thing that they've done in the US, which is required in India, I think they've also really cracked down on closed groups. So a lot of Facebook groups that belong to QAnon, that are even today talking about Pizzagate, or, you know, there was this whole thing of stealing the elections. There was the whole thing of Sharpie Gate that came out of the US elections. And those closed groups were cracked down pretty quickly by Facebook, or even Twitter took a really like quick action on those. And I think that has to come in India as well. There are plenty of closed groups that are talking about, different angles, that different misinformation that's harmful. We have seen real life harm impact in India. We've been noticing it for quite a few years now. And I think it's really important that we put these resources and capabilities together to crack down on these, on basically misinformation that comes out.
Also, I'm sorry, but I would like to add to what Devika said. I mean, it's very interesting in the sense that, she brought up the Bengal elections, which will be taking place in 2021. So we have already started, encountering misinformation or disinformation related to that, especially in Bengali. But the resources are so limited that it takes a lot of time to fact check something like that. And that is where, the scale of disinformation is so huge. That, it becomes really, we're already very late. And also there are very little, only a handful of organizations who are actually working on it. So there's a huge imbalance between, the speed at which disinformation travels and the speed at which it's fact-checked and the fact-checked information travels further. So that is where it becomes very difficult to, strike a balance.
So, that's really, I'm glad you brought that up because at Logically, what we're also trying to do, and we did that with the US elections and we're doing that, is we're trying to partner with federal and state government, different organizations, and we basically help and we basically, assist them using our AI and human moderation in trying to tackle that misinformation before it becomes a huge problem. So we try to track dangerous information, try to flag bad content that we see surfacing from different accounts, whether, it's 4chan or it's any kind of different boards where this misinformation is coming from. And we try to detect the threats and we also provide some kind of capabilities to tackle that misinformation. So I think the whole public-private partnership is a really good idea in terms of this because the government can give you that scale. It can basically give you that avenue where you can scale the stuff that we're trying to do. Like scale misinformation to the point that we can get to it as soon as possible. Which is, like Himanshi said, really hard to do in India at the moment.
Yeah, it reminds me of that, Brandon English law, right? If pardon my French, the bullshit asymmetry principle. It takes a lot more effort to fact check and correct this than it takes to potentially produce it, right? And that's always going to be a challenge. And of course, you guys see it day in and day out. I'm still a couple of steps removed from that. There's another, we were going about this thing of different countries, right? And something just occurred to me, because apart from, we've spoken about Bihar elections, we've spoken about US elections. Incidentally, another country that went to poll recently was Myanmar, right? And I bring that up specifically in the context of Facebook, right? Because there's this very interesting development. So in a post, and I think Himanshi, we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. That they announced, Facebook basically said that they have this feature called image context reshare, which will warn a user when they're about to upload information that's old and that's been fact checked, right? And what amazed me about this whole situation is that it was buried in one line in a blog post about hey, this is what we're doing for Myanmar elections, but that's all I've seen about it, right? And as far as I can tell, as a feature, this is something that various fact-checking groups and organizations have been asking for a really long time, right? That because, we see that a lot of, some of the examples we discussed, right? The Madhu Kishoran, for example, is content that's already been fact-checked in the past, right? It would really take a lot of the already severely constrained resources. Right. It would ease a lot of things where at least you can't recycle these things that easily, right? And it seems to me that these features are being built, but we're just not hearing enough about them. We don't know how effective they have been. And I've spoken to multiple people about this, it's amazing that very few people seem to know that this feature was shipped and how well it functions.
Yeah, like I completely agree with you. At this point, it's a whole trade-off between do we look at information that's recycled, misinformation that's recycled from the past, or are we looking at things that are coming in now? And like Himanshi said, that we're really stretched for resources right now because misinformation spreads so quickly And even if Twitter is flagging Trump's, you know, a tweet in about 10 minutes, it has still reached millions of people within those 10 minutes. And it's been retweeted, it's been shared, people take screenshots. So even if you are labeling it as misleading, the screenshots might not have that tag, which is further, which is basically further spread. And it's really important, and you're right, it's really important to try and stop the whole system of recycling old information, old images, and present it in a misleading way. And something has to be done about it.
Yeah, and just on that Trump example, right? Some numbers for our listeners. So one of the tweets, I think just before election day, I think Twitter took action about 40-45 minutes, in which time, and this is, I think, work done by the Election Integrity Partnership, where they basically said in those 40-45 minutes, it had already been retweeted about 55,000 times, and it had been liked over 120,000 times, right? And that's in just 40-45 minutes, right? And of course, even after they restrict them, people copy paste them, people take screenshots and share it. So, you know, each piece of information basically has a life of its own, right? They all have their own life cycle. They get shared, and it's really hard to keep track of that.
Yeah, and I think another thing that I've noticed, a trend now that's really coming up, is basically taking snippets of videos. Basically, if it's a 20-minute long video, somebody's going to share 20 seconds from it. That's basically misleading people, because you're taking things out of context. And I think the necessity of context is growing every single day. You just cannot take things without context, without the information, without the whole video, and present it. And even the spread of that disinformation is so quick. I think Snopes did a check this morning or yesterday about a claim where people were talking about how Trump said that he's going to assassinate, or he wants somebody to assassinate Joe Biden. And that was an extremely misleading piece of information that came out of something that was taken completely out of context. But the thing is, as fact-checking organizations, it takes us a while to get to that misinformation and check it. So there is still a lot of information that's already spread by the time we as organizations can get to it and debunk it.
No, I think the point about context is extremely important, right? And I think it was René de Rista who wrote about this recently. We basically have to prepare for a world where, you know, disinformation is always there, right? You always have to prepare for it. And, you know, while you were talking about that, one of the things that struck me also is that it could require us to change the way we do a lot of things, right? And so some of this is, I think, targeted more towards the media as well, right? Because or the mass media, because, you know, say what you want about social media democratizing content creation, etc. Everyone's got a mic, you know, blah blah blah. But I still think they have the biggest or the loudest mics around, and a lot of information they put out tends to travel faster as well. One example that sort of struck me was when I was watching some of this, and so I was watching CNN, and they were doing this projection of, hey, this is what happens if XYZ state so and so wins, right? And I found that graphic very interesting, where because they basically said, you know, this is the case, Trump wins or Biden wins, and it just struck me, and of course, you know, my mind works in this way, is that look, all someone has to do is take a screenshot of that and share it, right? That will probably, you know, and say CNN calls the election in Trump's favor. Yes, it might get fact checked quickly enough, but as you guys are saying, right, it this information spreads so quickly, and it takes so much, you know, it's so much harder for the fact check information to propagate in the same circles, right? There's a lot that the media also needs to do. And, you know, we were discussing some of this, right? And you guys had some thoughts around this as well.
Yes. So I think mainstream media has to be a lot more proactive. I mean, they cannot evade accountability anymore. So they have to keep in mind that their bulletins can be taken out of context, or, you know, whatever. You mentioned one example, even I have another example where mainstream media, what they do is they put some things in quotes. You know, so for example, if a politician said something which can be misleading or which is misleading, how a news network would report it is by putting it in quotes. Now, you and me, you know, for us being media literate, we can probably understand that quotes really mean that, you know, this network is attributing the information to that one particular person. But for a common person, for a layman to understand that is very difficult. So, you know, when it goes to social media, when the screenshot of that quote moves to social media, it becomes the truth. And, you know, people start believing in it and it becomes the fact. Let's call it that. So mainstream media cannot they cannot evade responsibility any longer. And we need, like Devika brought up, public-private partnership. I think we need more partnership, or, you know, mainstream, we need more involvement of mainstream media in the fact-checking process. Because even in the case of US elections, what we saw we've already mentioned, a lot of news networks, they cut off from the live feed of Donald Trump's press conference.
Yeah.
I think, we need more live fact-checking examples here in India. I mean, something like that happening in India is unimaginable. It's not even possible, because the way election rallies function here and, you know, the way things function there, it's very different. We need a more partnership from the mainstream media, in the sense that if their reach is way more than, you know, social media, even till date in India especially. Plus, the language issue is more sorted when it comes to mainstream media, because, you know, they operate in so many languages that information can spread so much faster via mainstream media than, you know, as compared to social media here in India. So, yes, like you said, you know, they have to be more careful and they have to be more proactive with how they present their bulletins or how they present news. They cannot evade responsibility any longer.
You know, Himanshu, you bring up really something really interesting, because I noticed something a couple of days ago on Twitter. Was, I think, Times of India published an article where they took out figures of how many times certain politicians lied in the US and how many times certain things were debunked and fact-checked. And a lot of journalists, like very highly known journalists, credible journalists, they basically said, do you think this is possible in India? Do you think Times of India is going to do something similar when it comes to politicians at power in India? And that actually is something to think about. And that's something that is really interesting as well, because is there a possibility that something like Times of India or Hindustan Times is going to start doing keeping tabs on how many times a certain politician, whether, you know, it's Rahul Gandhi or it's Narendra Modi or it's Amit Shah, any time that how much, whatever they're saying, how much of it is factual, how much of it is not, and keep tabs on that. Is that going to happen? And you're right, it needs to happen, though, while they need to scrutinize themselves and the stuff that they're putting out, both on paper and on media, like when they're broadcasting channels. It's also important that they start scaling their efforts towards fact-checking, you know, different things that are happening in India. And they do have the resources and the capabilities at the moment to do it. But unlike organizations in the US, such as New York Times, CNN, even CBS, they were live fact-checking a lot of debates and town halls that were taking place in the US. And I think that is a lesson that in mainstream media can pick up from the US and apply that in terms of the Indian context.
Yeah, I think the point, you know, you were making earlier about contextualizing things, right? I think that applies equally, if not more, to the mainstream media as well, right? I think, you know, the point about quotes is extremely valid. That's something I often rail about as well. I have a name for a movement. It's basically make headlines boring again. Let's see if it catches on. And there's another thing, right? Because there's also this aspect of, you know, when you repeat, you know, even dog whistles, right, as headlines, it's something that's concerning, right? Because you're effectively normalizing dangerous speech, right? Because I've been tracking this, I've seen this a lot, especially with you know, the whether it was the whole UPSC jihad thing or love jihad, right? You know, these hashtags are used for social media engagement. They're used in headlines without necessarily any sort of context. And you're, you know, essentially normalizing what is pretty much a dog whistle, right? I don't even know if it's a dog whistle. It's a whistle, right?
So, you know, in terms of that, I think it's very important that mainstream media prioritizes issues that they want to broadcast. So personally, I believe that when an issue is huge, it's massive. So for instance, you know, take QAnon in the USA. It's affecting millions of people. It's affecting 30 to 40 millions of people. There's a lot of misinformation. I think in terms of that, it's extremely important that a lot of mainstream media, keeping in mind extremely correct narrative that they need to build up around these issues that have become really huge, they kind of have to do some greater storytelling around them, and they need to sort of make people more aware of facts and things that are driven by evidence. But I think at the same time, I think news organizations need to pick things they want to talk about. So if there are smaller issues that don't have a wider implication, I think they shouldn't be picked up. I think they need to be squashed in a completely different manner than broadcasting those issues during prime time, which is what a lot of news organizations do in India.
Yeah.
And they amplify an issue to the point where it needn't be amplified. But then you have to pick your issues. You have to pick your battles.
No, absolutely. I think we saw this, right? The most recent and the biggest example comes to mind is the coverage around the Sushant Singh Rajput case, right? I think there were some stats which said that certain anchors allocated over 65% of their debates on prime time to that topic, right? When at a time when there were issues such as the pandemic and the declining economy, etc. So I think that's a very important point that you make as well.
But you know what's the most funny thing that I came across, and this is just from things that I spoke to before I wrote my piece about polling on Bihar, was that although, like, if you look at the US and if you compare the two countries, if you look at the US, QAnon played a massive role in these elections, and it still is, because it's still amplifying a lot of misinformation that's going around on voter fraud or, you know, the whole idea of deep state. But at the same time, when I spoke, and going into Bihar elections, I thought personally that COVID or Sushant Singh Rajput is going to play a massive role in terms of what's the outcome of the election. But when I spoke to certain journalists and I spoke to political analysts before it happened, they said it really isn't an issue in Bihar, which really surprised me. So regardless of these TV organizations, different channels, broadcasting and making a massive, amplifying the whole issue of Sushant Singh Rajput, did that really have an impact in Bihar? And from what I've read, it didn't. And then the next question is, why did it not? That's really fascinating to me.
I guess what I don't know is, again, look, whether the channels that dominate airtime in Bihar for giving it the same amount of coverage. I genuinely don't know that, and whether that played a role, right? A lot of the channels that you would watch in, you know, I think a lot of the that would be large pan India. That's a very interesting point, because I probably didn't expect that as well.
I think another important thing we should consider when we answer this question is, did the politicians actually bring that issue during their campaigns? So I didn't see a lot of politicians, be it from any party, bringing Sushant Singh Rajput's issue or making it, Sushant Singh Rajput's death, making it as a part of their election campaign or apart from one or two. So the momentum was sort of lost there. And that is why probably it did not really impact the voters and it did not become such a big issue. And of course, the fact that local channels probably did not play it up like the national media did, it also that too contributed in a big way in why it did not become an election issue there.
That's interesting, because I remember, like, months ago when this issue was extremely big, I think it was BJP who took out some kind of slogan which said "Bhulne nahi denge." if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, at that moment, you kind of was in the impression that this would sort of dictate the Bihar elections, or some kind of push will come to basically push this narrative further. But that's, like Himanshi said, that's not what you saw when the elections came on, and when Modi went to campaign, or other like key figures went to campaign across Bihar.
Yeah, there's actually some research around this. I think the team at Microsoft did some research between July and September, and they tracked how many politicians and journalists who were tweeting or talking about this topic. And at least at that time, there did seem to be a fair amount of interest in it. But yeah, it seems like by the time it actually came to election time, the issue seemed to have fizzled out. Okay, all right. So thanks, Devika. Thanks, Himanshi. This has been a very interesting conversation. The information ecosystem, as always, remains a very, very interesting and complex place. There are lessons that we can learn from what's happening in the US. There are probably lessons that they can take from us. Thank you both for doing this. Have a good day.
Thank you so much.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week: Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.